Blog Talk Radio.
Well, you know what, Bill?
Hey, what? We're going in yet? No.
Motorcycle safety program, trying to convince car drivers that once is not enough to look for motorcycles. And I heard about this, and I contacted them, and, you know, it sounds like they're doing, you know, it's a pretty neat thing. So we are starting to collaborate together. I don't have a lot of information on it now, but they've been putting up signs in, like, 25 different cities. Now, the signs, they only get permits to put the signs up for a couple of weeks at a time. They're not permanent signs. But, you know, a couple of weeks is better than nothing. So that's what I'm working on now for, you know, as the state safety officer. That's what I'm doing at the moment. And the other thing is that that new ruling that came out from the DOT on the helmet stickers, FMVSS 218. They said that they had to change the look and change what's on them and et cetera, et cetera. And it was assumed that the old DOT stickers would just grandfather in, but it didn't say that. So one of the Bolt lawyers, Mad Ray Henke, wrote a letter to the Attorney General of California saying, like, you know, let's see something in writing saying that the old DOT stickers are, in fact, still legal, still good. And that's pretty much all the news that I got for you today.
Well, I've got a question if you have a minute.
Yeah, by all means.
I really get confused about these camera traffic lights. If you run a red light and the camera kicks you, catches your photo leaving, in Los Angeles, they're saying that it's not legal. There's nothing they can do about making you pay the fine. The DMV has got no recourse. They cannot stop your driver's license or registration. There simply is no validation. But in today's paper, the San Diego paper said that if you run a red light and the camera catches you, the county of San Diego will give you a ticket. The DMV will put that on your driving record. And if you don't pay it, they can take you to small claims court. Now, John, we're talking about the city of Los Angeles and the city of San Diego, but here we have the DMV, which is a statewide program, having two different options. Again, Los Angeles, the DMV says we will not go against the individual. San Diego's DMV said we will go after you if there's a red light ticket. Have you heard anything about that, John?
Yes, I have. The Los Angeles has been losing money on their red light ticket program because they have to keep paying the company that's running the program. They have to keep paying them. And the police are not following up. If somebody doesn't pay, they just don't follow up. And therefore, I think it was yesterday, I'm trying to find the thing on my computer. I believe it was yesterday Los Angeles announced that they were just going to shut their program down. Okay, city council pondered whether to override a unanimous decision. Yesterday, the city council members of Los Angeles voted unanimously to let the program terminate on Sunday, July 31st. The financial situation was a critical factor. Los Angeles' red light camera program has been losing $1 to $1.5 million annually, in large part because L.A. County courts would not enforce unpaid tickets. So L.A. is
okay, John. Well, how can the DMV, which is again a statewide program, how can the DMV in Los Angeles say we will not go against you, we will not stop you renewing your license or the registration, and yet the DMV in San Diego says we will stop you from getting the license
well,
or the registration?
Well, that's right. I mean, that's what if they're going to do the program, then properly, then they should collect on it. I mean, as much as I don't like the red lights, if they're going to have the program, they should do it right. Okay, I mean, and the courts would have to, it's not the DMV going after you. What it is the courts telling the DMV that my ticket has not been paid, and then the DMV puts a hold on me renewing anything until I pay it. It's just like if I get a speeding ticket or a stop sign or anything like that. Any ticket with points on it, if I don't pay it, the courts tell the DMV. Matter of fact, I can get a damn ticket in New York, and if I don't pay it, they'll call the California DMV and put a stop on my license. Not a stop, but I wouldn't be able to renew it. So that's what that is, okay? And just the fact that the Los Angeles courts decided not to follow through on it has no bearing on what we do or we do not. Hey, on that subject, if a light doesn't turn, if a light doesn't change,
right?
Here in California, we tried to get a bill through a couple of years ago on what do we do? You know, how do we handle it? What do we do with it? And the bill didn't go through. That was about 5 or 6 years ago. The bill didn't go through, but the way it came out was a regulation telling the local towns and cities that when they're installing new lights, to make sure that the sensors would be sensitive enough to recognize the presence of motorcycles. Now, because there's nothing else in the law, I'm sure that the cops wouldn't want us to, like, just sit there until we get, like, really old and our bike rusts, you know? There's got to be some way to handle it. So I called the San Diego Police Department, the Highway Division, a couple days ago, and I asked the officer, if I come to a light that did not change, what should I do? And he said that I should sit there through one complete cycle of the lights, red, green, red, and back to where I was before. And if nothing has happened by then, if my turn arrow did not come on, or if my light does not change, then I should check around, and if there's no other vehicle or pedestrian close enough to be a hazard, then I can go through the light. If there was anything, there, a vehicle or pedestrian, I would have to yield to them, and then I could make the decision to go through the light. He also said that if I came to the same intersection tomorrow, and I know that this light is bitchy, I still have to wait for one full cycle before I make a decision to go through it. Now,
okay, John, because Screwdriver and I are highly visible in our little area, what I've been doing is, first, I come up there, and I put my bike on the kickstand in the circle. And when that doesn't work, and I realize I'm sitting there and I'm going to be screwed, and I'm looking for somebody in a car to come behind me, and nobody's coming, what I do is, and maybe I'm doing this wrong, okay, I'm in a left-hand turn lane, it won't turn for me, so I get out of the left-hand turn lane, I go back in the main stream of traffic, and I go up a block, and I try that left-hand turn. Do you think I'm breaking the law by going from the left-hand turn back to the main stream going straight?
No, as long as you're doing it safe, as long as there's no car coming and you pull out in front of them, you know. Because I had written letters, oh, Jesus, this is going back 15 years, one to the DMV and one to the CHP, and what do we do? Okay, one of them told me to do what you're talking about, go back in the mainstream and go up the block. The other one told me to wait for three light changes and make a left. So it's like, you know, if I had on, like, a jacket that said, you know, killer motorcycle gang or cops suck or something like that, I would look around for pedestrians and for cop cars. I mean, I would be really careful about making that turn in front of a cop car. But, you know, they're not stupid. They know if the thing don't turn, it don't turn. Now, the other thing the cop told me is that on that, I called the red light cop, the red light police. There's a name, they got a, you know, San Diego, blah, blah, blah. And he says that for a motorcycle, the best place to come up, you'll see the circle or you'll see the square. You know, it's you'll see the cuts in the blacktop where they put them in. Okay? And it says, come up a little off-centered. And that way you're covering more of that wire. You know, you don't just come right in the center of the circle. Come offset from the center of the circle.
What do you think, John, about putting my kickstand down when I do it always?
That's
helps anything,
fine.
Or that just...
You won't find people with Hondas doing that, though, because with the Honda, when you put the newer Hondas, when you put your kickstand down, the engine stops.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
also the new Harleys do that, too, Bill.
Yeah, well, that's
excuse me, the
like,
Hondas, they're not made in America anymore, are they? Did Honda go back to Japan, I heard? Did anybody hear that beside me?
They're made in Ohio.
No. I think they've gone back to Japan, someone told me.
Oh, really?
Some guys
I didn't hear that.
Honda
okay.
Said, yeah, they closed the Maryville, Ohio plant down. They,
oh, really?
Back to
okay.
You know what? Second information. No, I can't swear to it. See, John, I have a big concern of... I ride
the Valkyries and... The Valkyries and some of the Goldwings and I think the Magna, when they were making the Magna, they were made out of Ohio. But like I say, my Valkyrie is like, 10 years old now, so.
Yeah, so that's a big problem riding up here, John. So I ride with screwdrivers, so I have to assume the police are going to look and pull us over for God knows what. So, again, I try to put the kickstand down, give it one series of lights, and then I just go back into mainstream traffic and go up a block and try to come back and get the other way or something like that. But
well, I pulled up by the trolley today, Bill.
We're San Diego?
Yeah.
Okay.
And,
well, how, am I a mind reader? Am I supposed to know where you are?
No, finish.
All right, go
28th
ahead.
28th and Harvard Drive.
Thank you very much.
I pulled up. As the trolley arms came down, the light was red. Both trolleys went by. The arms were still down. The arms go up. The light's still red. Behind me, San Diego PD.
Yowza.
I stuck my arms out like going to be put on a cross. He tapped the horn. Told me to go through the light.
Well, that's all the police directive, though, and that certainly is something.
Well, I was surprised. I thought he was going to make, you know, I'd be sitting there.
Can I jump in?
Please, I was just going to say, Fran, have you got something to say today, please?
Well, there's a couple things that I wanted to add to what was actually spoken about.
Yes,
first thing is, in different townships, depending on their size, they can make any law stronger than the state law as long as they meet a certain amount of populace, i.e. the town just before Angel Hill Crest. They double their speeding fines through that township. Well, they can do that because of the amount of people that are in that town. Now, some people, like myself, I actually bought for the red light situation. I had actually bought a very large magnet to put on the back, on the bottom of the bike. Does that make a difference or not? Sometimes. It only works more if the sensitivity is up on the grid. Going through the light may not necessarily be an option, because if you're in an area that you're not familiar with, how far is it to the next place where you can do a flip? And if you can do a flip, is that light going to work as well? Or do you have to go further? How far are you going to drive so you can go in the opposite direction? So those are just a couple things that I kind of look at. You know what? Some lights don't turn at all. So,
that's correct.
Again, how long are you going to wait? You know, a discernible amount of time is, I count 1,001 up to maybe 10 seconds, 20 seconds, I don't know. And if no cars are coming, it's desolate, and I've done my deed, well, I'm going to make the turn. And at that point, I'm going to fight it in court, because at that point, the city's at fault, because they should have compensated for my vehicle that I pay tax on. But then I'm wondering.
Hey, I got a little thing to add to that. What I was saying about the red lights that don't change. When you're, once you do whatever you do to get through it, then it would behoove you, when you get home, call up the Department of Traffic and let them know that this light doesn't change, and they can come out and reset it. In San Diego, that number is 527-7500, 619-527-7500. In your town, you'd have to look up and see what the Department of Traffic is. By the way, the two of you live up by Vista. That the signs I was talking about, that Allstate is putting up, the, you know, look twice, they just put those up in Vista a couple of days ago. They posted them up there. So keep your eye out
for that. You know, Philip, one thing that we kind of neglected to do over the past some time is we keep bringing John on and just expect him to give a report. And every now and then, as you're telling me, we get emails from people, who's John? Well, John just not just giving us a report. It's John Del Santo. Mm-hmm. He's out of San Diego. He's been... He's been with the Bait, Bolt, and he's been with the motorcycle community.
He's not with Bolt.
He's not with Bolt.
No.
Okay, he's with the Bait.
Yes, he is.
Yes,
you are now?
I am a Bolt member, yes.
There you go. Okay. Last time you said no.
Correct.
You know, see, That was me talking. Walking over when I'm talking, you know? Anyway, this is a, you want, you go. So I want to thank everybody because I want everybody to understand that, yes, what's it? I want John to get some credibility. I want to understand stuff he's done here. One more second, please. Okay. John, I want to read something very quickly from Nashville, Tennessee. I wish I lived in a town big enough to have a red light.
We only have four-way stops.
Nashville, we just got that in a few seconds ago. Now, John's been a motorcycle advocate for all of our safety issues for some time. He's a hard-nosed journalist, and the fact that he's a getter for trying to read the facts and the laws that I really don't have the patience to look out for. But one of the things that you did, and I'd like to have you knowledge a little bit about, just recently you were strong enough to get the Caltrans to put some signs for us on the freeway. Would you, I know you don't want to toot your own horn, but it is kind of important because people want to hear about that. Can you tell us how you did that, John, please?
I didn't do it all myself. There's been people who have been trying to get that done for years and years. I was just like a hard nose on it. What I did was I just wrote letters and emails and telephone calls to everybody I could think of. You know, I just kept it up month after month. And Caltrans was my biggest problem. They were the ones that fought me tooth and nail and said, oh, no, it can't be done. We can't do it. We finally got the CHP, got interested in it and thinking that it was a good idea. And CMSP, California Motorcycle Safety Program, they got involved with it. And the CHP commissioner, the guy who's the commissioner of the CHP, he's the one that finally called up Caltrans and said, do it. Okay, and then they, as soon as they did it, they naturally took credit for it. Oh, look what we did. But I don't care who gets credit. There's the fact that it was done. We had it up for, like, at least a week last year, and we had it up for almost a week in the beginning of May, Motorcycle Awareness Month. So, you know, that's, it's just, it was just perseverance. Just, you know, in fact, I got a guy called me, or emailed me from, like, South Carolina or someplace. He wanted to know what I did. And that's what I'm going to tell him when I write back. It's just like, stay on the phone, stay on the email, keep breaking balls, and you keep. And it's good to remind these people not, hey, it'll save a motorcyclist's life. You tell them, look, it'll save state money. Because every time a motorcyclist crashes or dies, it costs the state money in overtime for the police and paperwork and all of that crap. So by having one motorcyclist not be in a crash, it's saving the state money. And because the drivers that we're driving with are just like, you know, they're driving with a bag over their head. So the more we can educate them, the better off we are.
I want to point out to everybody, because, again, we get emails, we don't give you enough credit. Both you and your lovely wife, Fran, ride your own motorcycles. You've ridden for many, many years. You were also saying earlier you were the safety officer for BATE. Is that correct, sir, or did I
I'm the state safety officer for the whole state. I'm the state of California, and also I'm for Local 6 in San Diego. I'm the safety officer down here too. So, and I've been in safety for like way longer than I've been riding motorcycles. Even I've been working in safety for 46 years now. So it's
if I can jump in.
Yes.
Please do.
I'll tell you something. John, at first, didn't really want to ride a motorcycle. However, to make his little wife, well-rounded wife, happy, it was the only reason that he learned to ride a motorcycle. And so that I would have a companion to ride out there with. And I think that's
pretty
special.
I had some static. Can you tell me, what was the incentive you used to get him on a motorcycle? We had some static. I couldn't hear that. What was the incentive?
He just only because I needed someone that would ride with me. And because of that, he decided to learn how to ride a bike. And he did. And what's interesting, technically he's actually a better rider than I am. And there's a reason.
You're just a girl.
Well, no.
Fran, you're just a girl, that's why.
I learned to ride much younger than I am now, all of 60 years. I learned to ride 40 years ago.
Huh?
And I learned to ride by the seat of my pants. No one taught me, you know, how to lean and all that kind of stuff. So when John learned to ride, we went into class. So, like I say, technically, he is an actual tech rider versus I'm the seat of my pants ride. And guess I'll make my bike dance just by the seat of my pants. But that's another story.
Fran, I want to share something with you. Many years back, I had my pan end was a 38 over Springer front end. I had a spool front end. It was suicide, of course. And I went out to the motorcycle safety class, and the guy said, yeah, bring it out, Bill. We want everybody to see what you can do. I passed that class. I did every stunt they could do with a suicide pan end. And afterwards, I was parking there feeling real good in myself. The instructor said, class, can anybody raise their hand if they saw Mr. Kennedy do anything wrong? Everybody in the class raised their hand.
Uh-oh.
The instructor said, Mr. Kennedy, he overcompensates for his weaknesses. He, being the motocross desert hill climber drag racer, he and his motorcycle have a different reaction, so we couldn't possibly break him. But I was so impressed with the school that they're teaching these people how to do things right, they're going to be far better riders than I ever am. I will live longer than everybody because with so many years of riding, I'm going to just do it the way I do it. But, Fran, I wish you could have saw my head when everybody raised their hand. He did this wrong. He did that wrong. I went, oh, my God. My wife went through that class, scored 100 and everything, perfect rider. So, anyway, they asked me now not to come back anymore.
Well, see,
keeping me humble, John.
Fun.
I just, you know what, I get my head a little big and it just gets shot down again. Of course, having a wife around, that's what I do.
When John and I took the next level class, it's interesting because they have a script that you're supposed to get your bike up to a certain speed and then lock your brakes up. And it was interesting because I guess you were only supposed to do it at 20 miles or 25 miles an hour in Lockett. I guess I was a little excessive because I left a very long skid mark. And it was interesting because the class, everyone in there was, like I said, this was the experience class. They were like, wow. And it's like, wow, what? Isn't that how you're supposed to be able to do it? You're supposed to be able to get out there and do what you need to do and not think twice. Because if you got to think twice, you're already dead.
You know, Fran, I have a hot rod dyno now with brakes front and rear, but in the old days, I only had just the mechanical rear brakes, and what I would do is take evasive action. The idea of me coming to emergency stop on my panhead was non-existent. I had enough brakes to stop at the stop signs, but if anybody pulled out in front of me in my old panhead, I just have to look for a way to go around them. What a shock it was for me when I actually had front brakes and rear brakes and everything worked. That was like, man, I don't know, 80s or something. Pretty much rolled my pan head through the shovel head days. I didn't care for shovel heads. But when Evolutions came out, I started looking at about the importance of the brakes. And I got to admit, they're kind of nice to have from a guy having an old pan head with just one funky mechanical rear brake. So times are changing all around us, you know?
But I'll give you one that was embarrassing. And what had happened was, when John and I, the first time we took the class, they said, okay, now, please check your bikes out. And, of course, the very first thing I looked for was the kickstart. Because my first bike that I had that I flew 75 feet off the handlebars was a kickstart bike. And the instructor comes up next to me and says, it's been a while since you've ridden, huh? And I was like, none of these bikes have kickstarts. Well, how did I know? You know, I mean, my bike did. But those, you know, times change, like you said.
I'm going to tell you a little short story, friend. I was at a bar with a bunch of hardcore bikers, outlaws, major people. I just sold my Wild Custom, and I bought a stock bike, and I was taking it home, and we're going to tear all up and all that. The night that we're leaving the bar, it took us 20 minutes to get all these motorcycles kickstarted, and I was a younger kid there. I hit my electric button, and all these old guys turned and looked at me, and I said, something is funny going on today. And eventually, everybody went electric start. There's a few hardcores out there, but the problem we had with kickstart only was you get the bike running, the guy next to you get the bike running, and then the third guy and the fourth guy. Well, maybe the first guy was bike would stall out, and we got to start all over again. It took us sometimes a long time to leave a bar. But when I went electric start, it was the devil. It's taken over everything. No more manly man stuff.
Well, a lot of things have changed in the industry. More and more women are riding.
That's a good sign. That's a good sign. You know, Fran, you know me personally, and I may tease you girls about riding and all that, but you know, I'm the most strongest advocate for women riders there are. I think women, and get my message, listen to me, get off the back of your friend's motorcycle or your boyfriend or your husband or your girlfriend's motorcycle. Get your own motorcycle. Once you cross over to your own motorcycle, you will never get in the back of the bike again. My wife's case, she said that we want to still ride with me at the funerals and the weddings and stuff we do. She says, I want to ride behind and hold on to you like I always did, even though I got the new motorcycle. Fran, I'm going to tell you, and you can ask my wife, when she got her motorcycle, she has never gotten on the back of my bike again. She said, I got my own bike. I encourage all women to think about taking motorcycle safety courses. I know in our area we have like a junior college carrying them, but I'm sure San Diego, you get stuff. Every place that got motorcycle classes, women, the whole world is waiting on you. Get your own motorcycle. And plus, there's nothing more sexy than a girl riding a motorcycle.
That's true.
My wife was riding the bike down the street. I was filling up the truck. The guy in the gas station yelled, hey, man, check that out. That's a chick on a bike. And I went, yeah, man, I think it is. No, man, it is. That girl got her own Harley. I didn't have the heart to say, yeah, man, that's life. I just said, yeah, man. He said, one day I will get me one. That if I rode down the bike, I would not make the same impression my wife does. Women on motorcycle, it's powerful.
Well, the one thing that I have learned through time is, and it doesn't matter if it's a male or female, I always tell them, before you buy a bike, go through the class. Because that will be the indicator as to if you really want this or not. However, if a woman is shy or, you know, hesitant, I can guarantee you this. If she rides a bike for a year, and she rides it at least on the weekends and maybe a couple other times during the week, I can tell you her personality will have changed. She will definitely take on anyone in any field and be top dog.
Fran, I got to say to you, first of all, I agree 100% what you're saying, but I want to point out here that I hold a lot of classes up at my shop, you know, Kennedy Scuttle Cycles in Oceanside. My brother and I own it. I have a lot of women coming in, and I need to stress to them the importance of the Kennedy Triangle, the right handlebars, the right seat, and the right foot pegs for the driver. And I want to point out that if you're a girl and you and your boyfriend are getting a little play fight and you punched him in the arm, he'd say, ow. If you kicked him in the leg, he'd be limping. Women do not have the same upper torso strength men have, strong legs. So I like to tell women how to get the bikes off the kickstand, how to adjust the handlebars so the angle's in, the angle's out. If they have a problem with their wrist, I have tricks for that. If they have a problem with their ankles, I have tricks for that. Every one of us has got injuries. Fell off the swing in the second grade, high school soccer. Everybody is, every day you have to deal with problems, injuries. If you allow people like myself, for example, you buy a new truck, you have to move the seat forward and backward. There are a lot of tricks that women need to know, but once you get the right handlebars, the right seat, and the right foot peg, the Kennedy Triangle, you can ride all day and all night. And we've all seen those little women driving semis. The secret is they're not pushing them. They got the correct seat alignment and all that. Once you get the right handlebar seat and foot peg on a motorcycle, I guarantee you, once you break the law of gravity, it doesn't matter what the bike weighs.
Nope.
But the wrong handlebar seat and foot pegs, it makes new riders uncomfortable. And it's hard for me just to tell you, many cases I have to watch you sit on a bike and feel a few different handlebars. I've come to notice that if you squint at me or frown, that's telling me, your body's telling you there's something wrong. So even if you can't give me the visual, the words as to this isn't right, squint your eyes a little bit when you're at our shop and I can say, let's change this or change that. If the handlebars or your wrists are turned a certain way, it'll put small stress in your shoulder. I'll take that stress away. If you have a problem with your ankle, and that's going up to your knee, it's going up to your hip, let me adjust that a little bit. I'll take that pain away. A minor pain today, by the time you get to Las Vegas, 300 miles, it becomes a major pain. And I hate to see people, guys and girls, getting off the motorcycles with their hands cramped, their butt hurts, guys with drag bars, their back hurts. I got nothing against bar bikers, but if you want to ride a motorcycle, you need to talk to people like myself. There's people everywhere that can tell you the importance of having that motorcycle fit you. Do you agree with that, Fran?
Well, there's a couple issues there, and you are correct, because for my handlebars, I actually have a 1-inch riser, and it's angled closer to me. I'm a little short, only a little, but that doesn't prevent me from riding. And part of what you had said about there are tricks in learning how to maneuver a large bike. Of course, the very first thing you learn is that you never park downhill, that you can't pull the bike uphill. You always let gravity suck. So you always learn to park so the back end is downhill. But there are a lot of things. And some of the things that I find, like at dealerships, and this is when John was going to buy his first bike. And we went from shop to shop. And, of course, we are talking, oh, God, this is way back. But it was interesting because all of the salesmen were catering and kissing butt to John. And one of them realized that I'm the one that really needs the approval of.
Constantine is about a 7-minute video.
So things changed.
On a television program about how your money.
Brad, you still with us?
Yeah, I hear music or something.
Yeah, I'm just trying to turn like.
Okay.
Okay. Well, but now what was interesting is every bike that John drove, I drove. When John was buying the Valkyrie.
1,300 units.
Keep in mind, I am a little short, and riding that Valkyrie, my feet can't touch the ground. But then that just brings me back to the original days of riding. And I remember John saying, because he was standing next to the salesman, when he saw me come to the stop sign, and I couldn't put my foot down, and, well, it was gas and go time, because if I tried to stop, I was going over. So it's definitely, you know, you gotta see what your possibilities are. And at that point, John says the guy had this huge intake of air, like, oh. But then, of course, when I went past the shop at 45, I guess he got a little worried. And when the guy didn't want to sell that bike, John says, well, you either pay for a bike or there's no sale, because I want that bike now. And he says, okay, we're going to sell that one to you. But, back then and still today, there are a number of people that don't look at a female as a true rider or a person that knows anything about machinery. Unfortunately, sometimes little is too much knowledge, and that's kind of where I'm at. I have a little knowledge, and sometimes it gets me in trouble. but I sure do like my get up and go on my bike.
Well, Fran, one of the things that I speak, probably the biggest thing that I give to women advice is when the bike is on the kickstand, the front tire is leaning to your left. Is that correct? When the
correct.
Bike is parked?
Correct.
I tell women, do not pick the bike up off the kickstand with the front tire leaning to the left. While the bike is still on the kickstand, turn the tire all the way to the right until it clunks at the stop. Then pick the bike up, and you've taken all the weight from fighting. Men have upper torso strength. They really have a problem. But I have never yet seen a woman, in fact, when I'm on Vegas giving little demonstrations, I used to bring little tiny girls up on stage, and I'd bring baggers up there, and they'd pick baggers up off the kickstand. So instead of picking the bike up with the front tire leaning to the left, while on the kickstand, we turn the handlebars so the tire is heading all the way to the right, and it clunks with the stop. Try that in yours one time, and you'll be absolutely amazed where all that weight went to, Fran.
Well, see, for me, I'm lazy. I like using spring, and what I do is I put my tire straight. However, I now will pull my bike onto the kickstand, and because I've now put pressure on the fork and the spring, that will bounce my bike up straight. I don't have to do anything.
There's
no
way to go too.
Huh?
That's a good way. That's a good technique, too. I've not tried that. I told the girls, turn all the way to the right. But I'll pass that information on, too, to the ladies.
That's the easiest. Now, the problem that a person can run into is each bike, the spring is different. So if you push too hard, that bike will dump you all the way on the other side.
Okay, well, get back to my technique. My technique won't do that to you. I think that's a little dangerous, Fran, but you, like myself, you have a lot of bad habits, girl, and you overcompensate for them.
Yeah, but I'll tell you
when
what.
When you ride, you develop.
No matter how light that girl is or how big that bike is, with that technique, she can jump any bike up straight. Any bike. It don't matter how heavy that bike is.
Next time you come down our shop, I'd like you to demonstrate that case. I got some of the people there, so another technique and all that. John, when you started riding, John, let me ask you a question now, John. When you first started riding, what was the single biggest obstacle you had to overcome riding the bike? Just was it lack of confidence, or was it like certain turns or brakes, or what was the one thing that kind of stuck in your mind why you were uncomfortable in the beginning?
Now, you're talking to me?
Yes, please, John.
Okay, two things. One, I was used to wearing sandals everywhere I went, and the fact that I had to wear hard shoes kind of was like, hey, shoes with tops. Because I've been a driving instructor for 40 years, my major concern was I know what those other car drivers out there are like, and I know that these people are really poor drivers, and I was really... At first, I was really concerned about not having, you know, being more of a target on a bike than I was, in a car or a truck or something like that. But that is until I became better and better informed on how to get away from them, how to stay away from them. So that's...
John, I want to share this with you very quickly. A very professional bike builder out of Paris, Richard Pignier, I probably said his name wrong. He came to visit me a few years back on his rigid frame stretch chopper, where he rode up to my shop wearing sandals, John. No socks, just sandals. And I was thinking, well, what the hell do I know? You know, he's French, who knows what's going on. He stayed pretty much all afternoon, and he was going to be on his way down. I walked outside to say goodbye to him. John, on the back of his motorcycle with his backpack and all that, he had an engineer boot, one. He took his sandal off, boot on, kick-started his bike, took the boot off, tied the boot back up to his pack, put his sandals back on and said, au revoir, Bill, and off he went. And I went, We'll never forget that.
The only thing I can say to that is this. There are three type of bikers. Most of them will say that there's two. Those who haven't gone down, those who have gone down. But you see, the third one is someone like myself that has gone down more than once. Now, as far as boots go, I will always wear boots riding a bike. I have had a few minor oopses where the sliding factor actually took it down to the steel-toed boot, and it buffed that sucker up real pretty. That could have been my toe. I like my toes.
If you're on the freeway, you go down and you don't have a proper footing, that freeway, that asphalt, that'll just grind your toes all the way down to nothing. That happens. And same thing, friends of mine don't like wearing gloves of any kind. I wear gloves warm weather, cold weather. I've seen too many people do injury to their digits. And by digits, I'm talking about the fingers and the toes. But to have your toes ground off, that's kind of a hard way to go.
Well, talking about that, what I would like to see people do, and I wish it was part of the motorcycle class, is all of these riders that are riding with backpacks on their back, do me a favor. I want to see you roll at least four rolls with that backpack on your back. And if that doesn't seem to hurt your back, then you know what? God bless you and go do it. But at 50, 60, or whatever miles an hour, with a backpack on your back, and you do a roll, your back is busted. I've had a friend that his cell phone, when he went down, the cell phone hit his hip just right, that he's got permanent nerve damage where the phone hit his hip. And that was just a stupid little phone.
So one of my concerns is, and I am surely as guilty of this, I love seeing a woman wearing really high heels, stretching their thighs, and making their legs look like they go 100 miles. But when I talk to girls, I tell them sensible shoes, sensible boots, and nothing bigger than a cowboy heel. Other than that, you don't have stability putting your feet down, wearing stilettos and all that. And I don't know. I will be going to Vegas in a couple of months, and we're going to Palm Springs right after that.
Yep.
And we're gonna see the girls running around stilettos, and I understand what they're doing. They want to make more attractive, but boy, that seems so dangerous.
Let me throw this in too, though. Are these actual hardcore rioters, or are these just a Sunday, let me show myself off? Because
honey, you know
I,
this.
I ride.
This is the time to go to Cook's Corner on Sunday. You know the type, honey.
Yeah. That's kind of like the bar fly.
Yeah.
Okay, it goes down to the bar and back home again. But
I don't mind girls wearing heels as high as cowboy heels, but please, for all the people that are listening to us, traditional cowboy soles, leather, they are too slick. If you're going to run with cowboy boots on, and there's nothing wrong with cowboy boots, but like I do, I have those vibrant soles attached to my cowboy boots on the bottom. Therefore, I got good gripping. And I hate to see girls wearing cowboy boots, which is a little bit of a heel, but then the sole's too slippery. Do you agree on that?
Oh, you got it. You go to a stop sign where someone has forgotten to tighten the screw on their oil. Now there's a nice little puddle of oil. You put your foot down on it. You're going down, honey. I don't care what that shoe is. Now, I do chest my boots out to ensure that there is some, gripping power with those boots. There are some boots that are better than others. But, man, I'll tell you what, a plain sole, no. That's not going to happen because that foot's going to go down. It's going to come out from under you, and that bike and you are going down. That's not
John, let me ask you, what type of helmet do you wear? Do you wear a three-quarter or a full face? What type of helmet do you prefer?
Are you talking to Fran or me?
Back to John.
Most of the time I wear a beanie. I'm in California, I wear a beanie because, they're reasonably well that you're not going to get a ticket with a beanie anymore. I wear if I'm going someplace that I don't know and that I'm looking at dangerous, twisty, curvy roads and there's possibility I might run into something that I'm not you know, that I don't want to, then I might wear a half helmet, a DOT half helmet. But other than that, normally I have a beanie on.
John.
Fran, what type of helmet do you prefer?
Wait,
Fran, back to
John.
You, please. What type of helmet do you prefer?
Wait, you got to ask John one question. Ask him what it was like the first time that he rode into Arizona helmet-free. He took his helmet off. Ask him how it turned out that night.
Yeah, I rode the whole day with, you know, because I had the long hair, you know, and I rode the whole day with my hair flowing in the breeze. And I got to the motel that night, and I thought I was going to have to shave my head. I had so many damn knots. It was funny.
John, first time I hit Arizona, I took that helmet off. It was midnight, and I was on the way down to the Yuma Run. We worked all day. We had all that. I was so happy. I got in Arizona. Cop lit me up. I said, what? He said, you have to have eye protection on 24 hours a day. I said, all I got is my sunglasses. He said, well, put them on your head. I don't care if you put them over your eyes or not, but you got to at least put them up on your head. So I rode the way from the border to the Yuma Prison Run with my glasses, like, kind of just above my eyebrows, hoping I wouldn't blow them off. I was so happy to get that helmet off. Bam, they lit me up. Where's your eye protection? So if it ain't one thing, it's another thing.
Oh, you asked me what kind of helmet I wear. I do wear a beanie. My neck will not support anything heavier than that. I need the oxygen. I do not have a screen in front of me. Driven quite a few miles that way, including cross-country to the left and on what have you. But the beanie is what I use. When I had the motorcycle accident in my younger years, I had a Bell helmet on, and it was right at my neck. And like I said, I did a 75-feet fly, and it did reputable damage to my neck. Luckily, it didn't break my neck, but my neck will not support anything heavier than a beanie.
My wife, Kathy, as you know, she's in a car accident, and her neck has been destroyed, her spinal cord, everything. She only wears a beanie. When we leave the California area, she wears a, I don't know what you call it, it's a little face shield that attaches to her little beanie, the three buttons on the beanie. It's a complete face shield. Any of those, Fran?
I still can't use that. I need the oxygen.
Okay.
I need
my wife wants it, especially going to state to the bugs and the sun and all that, but she's the exact same problem. I've given her half shell, I've given her full DOTs, I've given her nothing. It's too much pressure on her neck to where it's almost like a migraine. So her choice always been is a half shell, that's it. So I tell people, make your own choices in life.
Well, for me, it's not necessarily a choice. It's either a beanie, or I technically would not be able to ride because my neck will not support it.
John, you were getting back to you a second. You were saying that when you rode to Arizona.
I was asking what happens if you ride without
it. And she just said they won't get no tickets. Philip wants to know, what happens if you ride without a beanie?
I'm sorry, what?
Let me get back to Fran for 1 second. Fran, Screwdriver wants to know, do you ever ride without a beanie down there?
I always wear a beanie.
Okay. John, let me get back to you, sir.
There's only one
please
reason.
Go ahead, Fran. Okay.
I don't like my hair in my face. So the beanie holds my hair. So that's the reason I wear the beanie.
Okay. John, let me get back to you. You're talking about in Arizona. Your hair was all over you and all knotted up.
Yes.
Long ago and far away, I used to have dark hair. I know John said that's hard to believe, Bill, but I'm going to tell you, if I get the wife on the phone, she'll confirm my hair was a chestnut brown. Before we had the helmet law, my hair going down the road, I looked like a wild man. I used to drive downtown in Oceanside, look at those stores with a mirrored front so I could see my pan head, look at my beautiful hair going back. You can't get much vainer than that. However, for every action, there is an equal but opposite, and God has said, Bill, you're a little too vain with that long, long, beautiful hair, and as you know, John and Fran, I have quite the receding hairline now, don't I?
A little, yes.
It's chrome, yeah.
But there was a time it was all there. What the heck? I don't regret nothing in my life, nothing. I want to ask John this one question, Fran. You're talking about writing the letters. If you want to get involved and you're an individual, you don't belong to Bait, Bolt, Bam, or anybody else, is a letter-writing campaign better, or do you think if you have some free time, you can try to do some volunteer work with the senators and legislators, congressmen, try to help them get reelected, the whole time emphasizing the biker's need?
We've got a new guy working with the Bait and Bolt, this Douglas Finley, and his methods, I think, are going to be very good. His thoughts are that letter writing doesn't do poop. His thoughts are when you show up down at that congressperson's office and volunteer to help them, volunteer to write letters, mail letters, carry signs, to do stuff like that. He says that's the stuff that they remember. The way that he put it that made sense to me was that he said, if I believe that I don't need to wear a helmet and 1,000 congressmen write me letters, I'm still not going to believe it. Therefore, why should the congressmen believe 1,000 of us when we write them letters?
Yeah.
But,
well,
you know, it sounded reasonable to me. So doing stuff for them. If I go to a politician's office and I want to help them, I tell them I'm there as John Del Santo. I don't say I'm representing a Bait because I don't represent a Bait. Unless the board tells me I'm there to represent something or other, I can't announce myself as being. Of course, I do wear a Bait shirt, okay, but I'll show up. But I tell them, you know, I am John Del Santo and I'm here to help you. And that's, like we've got down here now, for instance, in San Diego, Denise Duchenne, who's been a pal of ours for years, may be running for Congress this coming election. And I'm going to be damn sure I'm going to be down there helping her out. And also Congressman Bob Filner, Bob Filner. He's been a biker guy, biker friendly for many, many, many moons, and he's running for mayor of San Diego this time, and I'll be down there helping him out too. So, but that's what they remember.
Again, you don't have to launch an organization if you don't have a Bait or Bolt or Bam. You can actually be active as a single person. A small example of that is every time there's a new mayor in Oceanside, we set a meeting up, and I want to sit down and talk to the mayor. This is who I am. This is what we're doing. May I ask you what your opinion is on this here? I want to know, are you going to concentrate on the redevelopment, or how much attention are you going to pay to the motorcycles? I want to present our case, and I want to tell them we do events. I'm bringing people in here. They're not just going to the motorcycle community. They're going to restaurants. They're putting gas in. They're stopping for soft drinks. So the city of Oceanside is making money. I want to know, when we put events on, will you show up? And, John, so far, Screwdriver and I, we've been very lucky that, as you heard over and over, the mayor actually, every mayor has stopped by and always got said a few nice words. And I got to tell you, it's wonderful. But when a patrol car pulls up on me at a party and I walk over, they'll say, Bill, the cops are here. Yeah. So I go outside. Well, I'm a new guy, blah, blah, blah. We're checking for your permits and all that. I'd say I appreciate that very much, your request, but I really don't understand too much about the paperwork. My friend does that. Can you go over and talk to him? And I point to the mayor. And the new cop says, Oh, yeah, it is the mayor. That's okay, Mr. Kennedy, and they take off and leave. I found out that, and Screwdriver's been a witness here, if we fight within the system, we're getting a lot better than try to fight it outside the system.
If I can throw something in, and
please,
I
please.
Hear this time and time again where people say, well, it's going to count as a voting box. At that point, technically, it's already too late because now you have to make choices between two, maybe, individuals you don't like at all. Whereas 6 months in advance, when it's during the primaries and so forth, and you can get behind one or two candidates that are more favorable and ensure that they get to be one of the primary or the primary person that's going to be voted on, now you're being successful. If you wait till it's voting day, it's too late. It has to be done beforehand.
I agree with that. I think that you should be able to have access to the city hall. You should be able to walk and speak to our legislators or our people running the city for our city council, excuse me. And also, though, Screwdriver and I, we go down to the police department without even being asked to go down there. There are times we need to say, listen, what's going on, blah, blah, blah. Why should we, as taxpaying citizens, Screwdriver and I are both veterans, family man, why should we be afraid to go in the police department and say, listen, we got to sit down. Well, something's going on here. Why we don't become more active, I don't understand. We can't let people like John and Fran, who are out there banging the boards, we can't let a few people do the work of many. Everybody's got to figure how they can come active. And I say, if you want to join a group, join a group. But there's things you can do on yourself, too. If you live in an area where there is no political organization, start one. Or if you just feel you're all by yourself, and I got some friends of mine that are real pain in the butt. They just want to be left alone. They can do things, too. So I'm asking you, beseeching you, don't just keep saying, oh, the heck, we can't do nothing. John and Fran Del Santo are examples of people can get things done. Do you agree with me on that, Screwdriver?
I agree.
John, what do you see about
this? It's all up to the individual.
Fran, what'd you say?
It's all up to the individual. One of the things that there's also a problem is in our riding groups, what you have are us older individuals, and then you have the very young that want to party, sport bike, and do whatever, and they're not interested in politics. And that's unfortunate because if they want to ride, and this is for the United States, this is for all of the United States, anyone that's out there, I don't care what your age is, if they don't get involved, and I've been saying this, touting this for over 10 years, if they don't get involved, and they keep yelling, oh, well, I'm not riding because, I you know, the helmet bill and what have you. You know what? Put that aside. If you want to ride, they better get involved. Because they're trying their best to get us off the road. They've been trying to do that for the last 20 years. And instead of saying that they can't sell bikes here, they've been nickel and diming the bike community to death. And so if they want to ride a bike, period, I don't care what kind of bike. I don't care if it's a Vespa. But if they want to ride, they better get involved.
Fran, what I can't figure out is, as you know, I am Deffy and John, too, and Screwdriver. We're old school. But the younger ones today, they've got access to the computer, and they've got access to, you know, the cell phones. The whole technical world, it's at their fingertips, and yet, correct me if I'm wrong here, I don't see the young people stepping up and getting as concerned, trying to help as much as I think some of the older people did. Am I misreading that, or how do you see the next generation of younger riders coming up? John, Fran, either one, please.
Okay. I think that they will as they get older. I don't think young people. I don't think young people take things as seriously, or realize that they've got this amount of work to do. And I kind of think it's always been like that. I mean, you know, it's I can see them getting more involved, some of them, because, you know, you've got an organization like, oh, let's say take a bait, okay? We've got, what, a quarter of a million motorcycle riders in California, and 5,000 of them belong to a bait. You know, where the hell are the rest of them? You know, so there's always going to be a, and then again, you know, we got 5,000 members in a bait. There's 1,000 of them, or maybe 500 of them, that are really pumping out and doing stuff. There's a small amount of us that are doing stuff for the rest of everybody else, and it's always been like that. And
John, let me interrupt you again. What is your connection to other bait members in different states? How do you keep the link going, sharing information?
There is not a regular website between us. I think it's more, I mean, I get news from New York and South Carolina, and mainly because there are people there that I know and that I've communicated with. But something could happen in Texas that I don't know a damn thing about. We've got one abate member named Gil Mellon, who he gets his information from there's an organization of motorcycle groups. Hell, I don't remember what it is, but it's a nationwide group. NCOM.
Oh,
Gil Mellon gets his information from NCOM, and it has to do with things that are going on motorcycle-wise all the way across the country, and then he posts it on our discussion list. So that's pretty
John,
much how I learn it.
Yeah. John, this is something that's bugged me, and I've mentioned to other organizations. They all look at me like, once again, Bill's off his rocker.
You're just a progressive.
We do have the COC, the non-com. They have their meetings once a year in different states. But locally, we have got Las Vegas coming up. It is a tremendous amount of gathering of motorcycles. I've heard 50,000. It could be more. I don't know for sure the numbers on that. Needless to say, if you go, you'll see it's a lot. It's not Sturgis, but it's a lot. But in Vegas, because it's a town with many hotels, many information, I've asked Abate before, why don't you get one hotel in Vegas and invite all the Abate people to get a room at the one hotel, and then on the marquee outside, say Hotel Fitzgerald, whatever, welcome Abate members, and then perhaps use their conference room or something to have some little loose meetings with them. Be great exposure for a bait. People are going to Sturgis. We're going to go in Vegas anyway. If we told one hotel you got, what, 200 rooms? Hey, we would like to have our people get it. We'd book the whole hotel. Every Vegas room is already booked almost anyway. But every time I talk to a bait, they go, we don't want to do something like that. I'm thinking, you have so many people there. Does that sound like a crazy thought to you, John, or what am I missing?
No, it's just a matter of finding somebody who wants to put the effort out. I mean, for once, of course, I'm not traveling that much anymore, okay? But
yeah.
I wouldn't want to speak up for 50 rooms and end up selling 3 of them and have to, you know, buy the rest of them. It's, you know...
You wouldn't have to make a guarantee, but I think if you notified all the Abate people in California, Arizona, New Mexico, Nevada, hey, that during Vegas week, we're all going to be kind of one hotel... Why don't you stop by and meet your fellow Abate members from different states? Without telling the hotel, we'll fill them up there. I think enough people from 4 or 5 different states would come to one hotel just to meet and greet. What do you think about that?
Well, I'll tell you what.
Yeah, I think
what
so.
I will do, I mean, it's like too late to do it now. But what I will do is I will contact Abate of Nevada, you know, and find out who's over there, and I will give them your suggestion.
I think it's a win-win situation. It would give you a chance to talk to people from Arizona, Nevada, and California. You're wearing your bait, California, and wearing the bait from Nevada. Hey, how you doing, blah, blah, blah. A hotel with a small banquet room, so we have a little dinner, and then have a few speeches and give everybody a chance to get up. Actually, not me speaking, so that alone will be fantastic. But a lot of people getting up, saying a few things about welcome to a bait, you know, blah, blah, blah. We're all under one big roof and all that stuff. And thank you for coming today. I think this is a win-win, and I've not been able to get people interested in there, but perhaps you, almighty John, with the big clout, maybe you could do something like that, John.
Yeah, as long as we don't try to organize anything. Trying to organize bikers is like trying to herd cats. So, I will pass your idea along to a bait of Nevada. I'll find out who's over there because, you know, it's 50 different organizations. We're not one national organization.
That would give a great opportunity for also people in the other organizations maybe to, I'm in town and all that, I'm with Bolt, but let me stop by and talk to some of the bait people. You know, Fran, you heard this, John, you've heard this. I've always said if all of our motorcycle right organizations, if we ever could pull together, work together, man, what power would it be? And we got to get the message out to everybody that rides a motorcycle. We need your help. If you're a guy, you're a girl, we need your help to share information because, as Screwdriver and I always say, what happens in Massachusetts today is going to affect us in California tomorrow. We have to
already
share information.
Happening.
Yes, you're right there.
When they do blockade, and the only people they're pulling over are bikers.
Yes,
that's
true.
They're not even concerned about it. It's already happening. And this is why I'm saying,
exactly.
Biker community has a choice. They either get
can I ask you guys just a second, Fran, sorry. We want to play a song. We have a little difficulty against the people coming in here. So can we play a song and hang on with us? We'll be right back to you, okay?
Cool.
Hey, what song are we going to play, Screwdriver?
We're going to play Little Stormy Montana.
With my ex-wife. How's she doing?
This one's, she's doing okay. This one's called Biker Chick.
I'm worried about that. Check, yeah, I haven't sent that album check in a while.
And we'll be right back.
Montana.
Dresden,
Tennessee. A good friend
Dresden,
of yours
Tennessee.
And mine.
That's correct.
A young lady with a great voice and an even greater future.
Yep.
The lady has a powerful voice, a very sophisticated voice. She's a there's a good cross selection of ballads and kind of southern rock, a little this, a little that. Don't forget that name, boys and girls. Stormy Montana. She's in Tennessee. She controls Tennessee today. Tomorrow she'll control the world.
That's it.
Stormy Montana, our friend out. Hope you and your mama are doing good today, Stormy. John, you back with us, friend?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm still here. I'm still here. I want to get back to that Nevada.
I'm sorry, can you hang on one second? We have a caller that's got a question they want to ask you. Hang on for a second,
cool.
John and friend. Don't go nowhere.
Hello,
caller. You're on the air. 731, please.
Hi, y'all.
Is that who I think it is, Bill? Is she looking for the alimony
check? Is that
today?
The young lady with the great voice and even the greater future?
Yes.
Oh, I gave her all that sales pitch and she jumped in. Stormy, is that you?
Y'all have got to stop doing that. Y'all are going to make my head be big. My head's going to swell up. I'm getting ego the size of California.
Well, you know.
How y'all doing?
We're doing fine today. We're talking to some good friends of ours, John and Fran Del Santo. These are two people, the husband and wife, that have not gone up against the whole state of California. But what they're doing is they're showing how one person can make changes. On our freeway, we have these freeway signs. And John and some of his friends, he's always saying, let everybody know, he had the state change the sign to say, watch out for motorcycles. And we try to show people that one person can make a difference. John was talking about letter writing, but he also said about doing some volunteer work for the congressmen, senators, legislators. Let them know, as motorcyclists, we want changes. We want our rights. Now, Stormy, you're just a little bit young still to have a motorcycle, right?
I can't even drive my truck. So, yeah, just a little bit.
Oh, that's funny.
Stormy, did you hear us talking earlier about having the motorcycle set just for yourself, where you the correct handlebars, the correct seat, and the correct foot pegs? It's the same thing as you getting in your truck that you don't have yet. You have to move your seat forward and backward. That's the secret to everything. And Screwdriver would tell you, I give demonstrations in Vegas where I show women that their strengths are different than men's strengths. I know it sounds a little difficult like that, but your wrist turn a certain way, take pressure off your shoulders. We have John and Fran Del Santo. Stormy, did you have a question for one of them? I put you on the spot, didn't I? There you go.
Putting me right on the spot, aren't you? How young were you when you started riding exactly?
Me? I rode before.
Yeah,
John,
either
obviously.
One of you.
Well, John learned to ride. He learned to ride it when he was 52.
Mm-hmm.
And some people might think, well, gee, that's awful old to learn to ride a bike. Well, not really. It's whatever you want to make life out of. I rode a bike out of necessity in Florida because that was the only thing I could afford. And I was riding a bike at 20.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. So you started out pretty young then, huh?
Yeah. And I'm 60 now. It was difficult back then because having a woman on a motorcycle on the street was almost non-existent, unheard of. Even when John and I drove cross country, there were a number of people that just did a double take because the further I went east, the less women I saw riding bikes. So I became almost unique again.
Yeah, we don't, like, just right here around Tennessee and Kentucky, like, there's not many people, many women out here that ride bikes just by themselves. So, yeah, you would almost be a monopoly out here.
Oh, I'll tell you what, Kentucky and Tennessee, those rolling hills, you got some of the best motorcycle riding country. And to not take advantage of that, shame on you. It's gorgeous.
I'll be perfectly honest with you. I have never sat on the back of a bike before. Well, the main reason is because my mom's first husband got killed on a motorcycle, and she said she's lost enough on a bike. So, but she said that the first time I ride, if I ever ride, that I could ride with my Uncle Waylon, and he's promised me he would take me riding when he gets sober enough, but obviously that has not happened yet. So I'm looking forward to it when I can. I actually have this bookmarker in my guitar case that says I would like to ride a Harley just once. So that I made up when I was in like the seventh grade.
Well, let me tell you this. I've trained a number of people to ride, and the people I generally train to ride are those that have had difficulties for one reason or another. There is a friend of ours had MS. We didn't know it at the time, but that was one of the reasons that she had difficulty with her legs and riding. And also,
does she still have it?
No, because the MS got bad enough where she couldn't. But
Have multiple sclerosis?
Yeah, she still has MS. But
actually, I've got something that could probably help that.
Oh, cool. The reason that
I'm
going to
go on a little bit of a sales pitch here. Have you ever heard of Immune 26?
Heard what?
Heard of Immune 26?
No.
It's actually called BioChoice or Immune 26, whatever. It has it both on the label. But what it is hyperimmune eggs that are condensed down to a powder form. And what they do is they inject the chickens that are fixing to lay the eggs with 26 different antibodies. That way, they would send it over to the eggs, and they would be hyperimmunized, and you could sink that down into a powder form. And what it does is it doesn't, you know, raise your immune system or anything like that. It balances it so you can fight all that off. We had a friend who had multiple sclerosis, and it pretty much just went away after about maybe 2 months of taking it.
Wow.
Yeah, it helps with my psoriasis. It helps with my sinuses.
At some point, I'm going to have to get that information from you.
Okay.
Because if it's good for that, then it's actually going to be good for other things as well.
Yeah.
Fran, Stormy, can you tell a friend how Fran, anybody out listening, can get in touch with you regarding that information?
Anybody can get in touch with me.
I've got a website, stormymontana.com, and I have an email going straight from that account, stormy@stormymontana.com. Just Stormy with a Y, and Montana, like the state. Just stormy@stormymontana.com, and you can email me there. And
cool.
If you want, you can have Bill or Phil give you my phone number, which I'll send them in a private message here in a minute.
Yeah.
And you'll be able to call me. And my mom would probably have more information on it. It's out of a company called Legacy, but you can buy one can of the powder, and it should last you about a month if you take a scoop or two every day. You have to take it in something cold. It can't be anything cooked.
Yeah, because that will kill it. Yeah,
exactly.
How would that be for someone who's got diabetes?
My grandmother has diabetes. She, after about a month of taking it, she was taking about maybe 7 or 8 pills a day for it. She got completely off of her medicine. And this is a woman who eats like a cake a day. We'll make it in the morning and eat somehow the whole cake and not kill over. She was Yeah, it really helps. It's helped me with, I have psoriasis really bad on the back of my head. I've had that since I was really little. It's really bad, and sinus problems and stomach problems and stuff like that. And it just completely helps it. It helps my mom's arthritis, blood pressure problems. My friend Stella Vaughn had fibromyalgia, and she's been able to get completely off of her medicine, and she's better. She's able to be up walking around because of it too. And also, like, circulation problems, it will help with that too. If anybody has, like, circulation problems that you know of, you could direct them towards that as well, because we had a friend, Nancy McIntosh. She had diabetes, and it was causing circulation problems to one of her legs, and they were fixing to have to amputate it. And she went in, and they checked it, and pretty much hardly any blood flow to the leg at all. It was just big and, just dead, pretty much. And we got her on that before She got it amputated, and they got her on the surgery table and cut into her leg, and blood just went everywhere. She was starting to get the feeling back in her leg and everything. It's, I hate to say it like this, but it's a miracle. It's a miracle in a can, in egg form.
Works for me.
Stormy, so, can you tell us a little bit about you?
Excuse me for a second there, Bill.
Okay, go ahead.
Stormy, I just sent you John and Fran's phone number in a chat, in a
oh,
private
cool.
message.
Hey, okay,
we're
cool.
When is that event in Nevada?
Is it September 29th through October or something, maybe, I think?
Yeah.
Ish?
Yeah.
When are you driving out?
Well,
I'm
going to go.
I might drive out, stay a day or two and then come back.
I would no,
I need a vacation.
I'd love to meet you out there, but I'm going to go to the Grand Canyon Caverns. I'm going to roll back down around. I'm going to hit Lake Mead, to the big dam, Hoover Dam. Then I'm going to go in Las Vegas, the back door. So you could catch up with me for a couple of days, but I'll be on the road for.
That's a ride with Kevin.
I'm going around a little bit, yeah.
Darn, I'll take those.
Don't know how the wife's going
to.
Ago.
That ain't a long
way. I haven't looked
at
a hotel yet. My wife's looking at that right now, where she wants to stay at.
We lost John.
You lost John?
No, I think he hung up.
John, you hang up?
John,
Fran,
you on the
still
phone?
With us?
John hung up, okay. Hon.
Yeah.
It's okay. All right.
Okay.
It's okay.
You think you'll be getting away for a couple days, Fran?
I would love to go for a couple days. I need the exercise. All my bike
okay,
is
well, let me get back with Kathy and tell we're staying at and all that, and maybe you can meet us
okay.
at Vegas, because I'll be coming in the back door, and then I'm going to need a couple days of rest, and then I got the meetings at the Cashman Center, and I got some schmoozing to do, so that would be a good time to hang out and visit. But going with me, I'll be gone for, I'm putting some miles on to get there. I'm going in the back door. I'm going all around backwards.
Kathy going by truck? Who's going to drive?
Oh, Bill's going to drive. He's going to ride on the back.
Fran, this is she's determined. She wants to do this. I've got a friend of mine with an airplane. He'll fly her to Vegas. No. Friends of mine with trucks. No. Friends of mine with luxury cars. No. She said if this is the last ride, she's going to ride the bike, and she wants to push me to the Grand Canyon Caverns. She wants me to push all this. And then get to Vegas and then rest up for 2 or 3 days before I roll the 300 some miles back, too. So I don't see this. Fran, I think I see a lot of stops on my way. A lot of stops. But what the hey? I'll get back to you and all that. Would love to have company with you out there.
I'd still love to come. If I'm not
great.
Working, I'd love to come.
Okay. Stormy, you still with us?
I'm still with you.
You know, I want to get back to you for a second because...
What I like to do, what I like.
Cut me off the air again. Just cut
because,
me off the air.
Because.
Just,
because.
I'll just take a little nap here.
I just want to. I want to schmooze this in because I don't want. I don't
oh,
want.
Oh, but wait.
Her,
go
I
ahead.
Want her,
still talking?
I don't want her to get.
Who?
Stormy.
You want her to do what?
Well, she said that we're going to swell her head. She's going to get a big head if we keep complimenting her on her song. So.
You're going to say something bad?
No. What
well,
I was going to do
if you say
was,
something nice, her head will get bigger.
Wait. What I was going to do with Fran.
You going to say something bad to her? That's
no.
Wrong. That's wrong.
Fran, what I was going to say, Bill.
Yes, go
and
ahead.
And Stormy. And
go
Fran.
Ahead.
Is Fran, I want you to, this is a truly unique young talent. And
it's a good friend of ours. We like the person.
Yes, and she's a phenomenal singer. And Bill picked this song. And this one is called Sing the City Home by Stormy.
That's what I kind of like.
We'll
play
this one and then we'll be right back.
This will be for you, Fran, and for all the listeners out there. I want the chance we get. I like to listen to this girl's talent. I just feel comfortable listening to her sing.
Hush up.
For me personally today. But you know, but she's got great talent.
You're on
Again, there's our good friend Stormy Montana with one of her many, many, many songs. Stormy, I have to tell you, when I hear different songs, I hear different parts of your personality. But when I hear this song, I feel this is what I think as close as you are in your real-life personality. Again, sometimes I hear songs a little more rough, a little aggressive. But somehow when I hear this song...
You mean like some of the songs I play?
Yeah. Everything I use, hard edge. But somehow when I hear Stormy do this one, just kind of... I think it fits her right now. But again, we all have many, many personalities, as we know. But I just want to say I like that song very much, Stormy.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I actually kind of added a bit of a personal touch in there. My friend James Slater wrote that song. He wrote the Martina McBride song, In My Daughter's Eyes. I've been friends with him since I was about maybe 10 years old and been going out singing some shows with him whenever he would be doing like In the Round stuff in Nashville, and pretty much had open access to his catalog, which I was really lucky. He's an amazing writer. But he had different names in there, you know, where I say Waylon Be Scratching on the Washboard, Trent Be Locking Down the Drums, Donnie Wayne Will Make That Fiddle Cry, and the Guitars Will Hum, that part. He had different names in there. Waylon and Trent and Donnie are some of the guys that I sit up at the clubhouse and sing with every Saturday night whenever I don't have a gig. So that made it feel a little bit more personal and everything. And that was the first video we shot, too, and we shot it at the Keg there in Fulton, just a few miles away from there. So it felt very comfortable. It's a very familiar song. I can relate to it very easily. So I guess you would be right. That does show a little bit more of me than some of the other songs, but every one of the songs I felt like I could relate to, or otherwise I wouldn't have done them. My song selection.
Second, we got another caller wants to ask a question. Caller, come on in, please. 978. Caller, you're live. Talk to us.
Phil Burrell. What's happening?
Who is this, please?
Pete.
I'm sorry. I'm not close to the board. I didn't see all that. Pete, we got Tommy on the air.
It's been a while, man. I was sick for a while, so I couldn't call in.
Oh, okay.
Had a little mild heart attack.
Did you hear a conversation with Fran and John Del Santo earlier, or you just came in right now?
I just came in now because I was walking my dogs, and then I realized how late it was. I was like, oh, my God. 10:30. I'm like, yeah, I got to call in. I haven't called in a while. You know, like I said, I had a mild heart attack. So,
I didn't hear that.
There's nothing really mild about a heart attack, but I was pretty sick for a while. But I'm just joining. I'm tuning in now, so figured I'd call in.
Really, we had about an hour and a half discussion about abate, about trying to make some changes, and how this one man, John, and his wife, Fran Del Santo, they helped make a lot of changes with our senators and congressmen by simply not giving in and doing something. And they were telling everybody how if you want to make a change, we all got to get involved.
That's right.
Now, let me ask you this. Out there in where you're from, do you have a strong abate chapter out there, or is it mostly individual riders out there?
I think it's stronger on the West Coast, you know, than it is here. I mean, I don't belong to it, you know. You know, I think the West Coast is, I wouldn't say strong. I guess on the West Coast it's stronger, you know. People just need to start, even if they don't belong to abate or any of those things, people need to start sticking up for themselves, especially in Massachusetts, on motorcycles, you know, because I know firsthand because, you know, for example, I just got in from Walmart, and I got followed the whole way home. I got followed by an unmarked Crown Victoria. But the guy never stopped me, you know. He just busted on me. If he had, you know, I would have handled it professionally. I wouldn't, you know, done anything, but I wouldn't have taken any crap either because I've been harassed by the police. I've been beat up by the police. Took five of them. But, and a dog, a German Shepherd. But over here, I don't know. There's a lot of guys that take a lot of crap, you know, on the East Coast, and they just let the police tell us what to do and when to do it. And to me, that's
well, common. There's an old saying: you deserve what you tolerate.
That's true. That's true. Very true.
Well,
but on my Facebook page. Oh, yeah, I didn't say hello to Stormy Montana. Hello.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm a little tired, but I'm good. I was listening to your music there. I love it.
Well, thank you.
We also got Fran Del Santo on the phone.
Hi, Fran. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing good, thank you, honey.
That's good.
Our bunkers don't know enough to lay down and roll over. and you know something? Bikers are the only people that I know, no matter how bad we're hurt, and as God is my witness, we get up, and even when we're hurt, we still get up and we continue.
That's right.
And we get done what has to be done.
That's right.
And that's what we are. That's who we are.
Yep.
So,
shows like this. Phil and Bill and Hermes and all the other shows, Hank, people need to listen and get involved and start standing up for themselves. I've been so many times arrested and, you know, roughed up by the state police, just mainly the state police in Massachusetts, and I got sick of it, you know. So my days of beating people up are over. So I just go legal now, you know. If a cop strikes me or puts a gun to my head or lets a dog bite at me, which has happened a few times, I'm just going to sue him, you know. I'm not a bad. We have 2,000 Hells Angels here right now, all right, about an hour and a half from me for the World Run in Laconia, New Hampshire. And I was watching on the news and the police, they're like, you know, they're like, oh, we had to call in extra officers. We don't know if we're going to have any trouble. Give me a break. You're not going to have any trouble. Those guys are so they're so cool, and they're so, they don't want the trouble. They don't want the trouble. The cops act like, you know, we have 2,000 HAs here for the world run. We had to call the sheriff in. We had to call the state police in. We had to call reserve officers in. Like something major is going to happen. You know, that's anywhere. I mean, people, you know, start to have a good time and somebody might end up in a fight. What big deal, you know? Because it's a motorcycle club now. It's like, oh, high alert, you know? You know, my mother called me up and she said, you got to turn the news on, you know, a couple of days ago. They're hiring police officers from all over the place to cover this world run because the Hells Angels are coming in, you know? I'm like, give me a break, you know? I mean, they're no threat. They just, they have this brotherhood, and they're coming in and to be together with their brothers from other countries even. And they're not there to cause wreak havoc and like people see on TV. You know, it's ridiculous. But the cops make me laugh.
And you think the economy was in bad enough shape they didn't need to be hiring any more cops.
Yeah, no kidding. They hire everybody. Corrections officers, police, state police, sheriffs, everything. You know, for nothing, you know. It's like, and it's funny, what's funny about it is because Laconia in New Hampshire, Bill would know this, they have Bike Week. Philip probably knows this too. They have Bike Week every year, and, you know, they pull in, like, you know, hundreds of thousands of people at Bike Week. And, you know, they make a big deal out of that. Now, there's only a couple thousand guys coming in for this world run, and they're acting like there's just like 10 zillion bikers coming in with patches, you know. I don't know. It's just
they
a
all
good
have
example
Barney
of the
complex.
Foolishness from these stupid idiots, you know.
Hey, Bill Kennedy, I want to jump. About 20 years ago, I was drifting out towards Sturgis a long way, so I didn't know where I was going. Just floating around with my brother. Little small town, and I was having lunch, and I noticed that there was a couple local cop cars came in. Then I noticed some of the local state police came in. Then I noticed pickup trucks, cars, everybody, all these young, healthy guys sitting there, everybody. It must have been 50, I'm exaggerating. I asked the waitress, I said, what's going on? She said, well, you guys have California license plate. And I said, well, yesterday all the Hells Angels came through town. And they thought you were like the vanguard or you were like the follow-up. We didn't know what it was. So I went outside and I said, hey, in case you hadn't checked, all Hells Angels are 7 foot tall, 500 pounds. And the local laughed. He turned around and goes, ah, go ahead, guys, eat your lunch, no problem. The whole damn pot was full, ready to roust us. Just because I was driving through that little place, and I had California plate. No colors, no nothing. But you never seen such a parking lot full of people waiting to get
it. Oh, it's just California, you know? It's, you know, come on, you know? California biker, watch out, you know? Give me a break.
You know,
I tell you, Canada is the worst, man. Canada is the worst when it comes to that. I was talking to Juno about that, and a couple other of my friends that were in a couple, not the HA, but another club called the Mescaleros years ago. And he said, you can't believe, you know, they went to go to, they got to the border of Canada, and I can't even describe how terribly. He said these cops are all over them for nothing, you know, the mounted police or whatever the hell they're called. I don't know.
Came back from last month with, a couple months back. He was with a member of a patch holder, 4.5 hours interrogation just to cross into Mexico. 4.5 hours because one of the guys was a full patch holder.
That's ridiculous.
No problems, no outstanding tickets. The other people coming in, 15 minutes and they're gone. Other motorcycles pulling in, they're gone. Because one of my brother's friends had a patch on. Bad boy, 4.5 hours. Welcome to Canada, for Christ's sakes.
My friend, one of my good friends.
Fallen much?
One of my good friends got to the border and he had a support your local red and white sticker on his bike. And the Canadian police, they automatically grabbed him. You know, are you in the club? What's this? You're not coming into this country with that sticker. And there's a sticker on the. He says, well, I'm not taking the sticker off my bike. That's who I support, you know. So go F yourself, basically. And he turned around and he came back, you know. Screw him. That's ridiculous, 4.5 hours of interrogation. Who do they think's trying to get into Canada? Hitler? I mean, give me a break, you know?
Well, if I can jump in.
You go for it. Yeah, jump in.
July 23rd of this year, Amul, California, we had a similar situation where the motorcycle patch holder Mongols were camping, and they did essentially the same thing. They brought in all of this police force because they were afraid that they were going to tear up the town. And it's like, I guess we are just really, really bad people that don't have our own families and that we don't have whatever it is, and that this is what we do for a living, is tear up town. Unfortunately, with the shooting of, it was a domestic dispute, not a motorcycle revenge or anything, that ended up shutting down in Arizona. You don't have enough money to go to Sturgis. It's kind of a offshoot kind of come here. If you don't have money, go to Sturgis and have fun.
Yeah.
Which they ended up having to close that down because of that shooting, and that didn't have anything to even do with bikers, other than they happened to be bikers, but it was a domestic dispute.
Yeah.
The first thing that they always look at, oh, well, you're bikers. Well, therefore, you're wrong. It's like, well, I thought you get to be tried. And then, innocent and proven guilty. And it's like, that works up until you're a biker. If you're a biker, you don't even get that.
You know, and it's just not in this country, in Canada. It's also... My family's from Russia, and there was a shooting several months ago involving somebody that had a high authority, and not in a motorcycle club, but another type of organization, and he was gunned down. And two or three guys were seen leaving the scene on motorcycles, no colors, nothing. Automatically, the cops and everybody else said it was the HA, you know? And it wasn't even them. It was just some guys on motorcycles that shot this guy down. You know, and they found out who it was, and automatically assume, it's the HA. You know, we know who it is, and they were wrong, 100%. But it's just somebody on a motorcycle, so they automatically assume bad news. Club member, patch holder, red and white patch holder, whatever. The police need to catch the real criminals, put them in prison, and leave us alone. Bottom line, supporters, members, prospects, women, men, whoever, find something. I met a guy a couple weeks ago, and he said to me, we were talking about the police and how they have nothing better to do than to harass bikers, especially bikers. And he said to me, he rides a sport bike, this guy I was talking to, like a ninja or something. He said, the boredom police have grabbed me many times. And that stuck in my head, the boredom police. And I started laughing. It was funny. I said, that's a good term to use, the boredom police. They sit there. They have nothing else to do. You're on a motorcycle, and they grab you, and they interrogate you. The boredom police, It was pretty funny. It was at a cookout, actually, that I was at. But come on. Go catch the guys that are doing the real crimes. That's ridiculous. 4.5 hours of interrogation on a guy on a motorcycle. Because he had a bike and he looked different. He might have had long hair or something, I know, I've been through it. Stupid. Stop. It needs to stop. Everywhere. Not just in the United States. Everywhere has to stop. They're not going after the right people here. Motorcycle clubs are not gangs. I hate when people say gang. They say, they're a gang. Not a gang. They're a club. They're a brotherhood. They're not a gang. Get your head out of your ass,
Pete, there's nobody out there in their right mind that could possibly claim that every single buddy in a club is a bad person. That's crazy. There's some people who hold good jobs, working hard, having a good time. If you work for the bus company or the taxi cab company, there's always a few bad apples. The motorcycle clubs, they got some bad apples. But to put such a broad sweep of the brush and saying everybody in a motorcycle club, everybody on a motorcycle is involved in crime. But it just can't possibly be done.
Well, you you watch these, you know, Bill, you watch some of these documentaries that these TV stations put out there, and that's what they put into people's heads. You know?
Well,
they go back to the 50s and the 40s and, the, you know, when they had all the big things going on, and they automatically say, hey, this is how it is now. It's, you know, I mean, like you said, you do have a few bad apples here and there, but it's not like people think. It's, you know, it's completely the opposite. My mother is 70 years old, and she said to me, she said she worked, she, my mother used to bartend in Salem, Mass, and there was a Hell's Angel bar there, and she was a bartender, and she said that she felt so safe when the angels came in. You know, she felt safer with them than if she was surrounded by a bunch of police officers, you know, with guns. And they're good people, you know. Bikers are good people. But the cops just have an all-out huge hard on for us bikers. You know, you don't even need a patch, man. You know, you're just on a bike, you're getting stopped. Phil, you know. You know, you've been through a million times, too, you know.
Gee, I try to tell you what I do when I get stopped in Oceanside, our hometown. I jump off my bike and go, look, look, down the street, there's a screwdriver. Cops jump in the car, they drive off, leave me alone every time. That's all I... You know, I have to say, Pete, I've been lucky enough that my business, that I've traveled all over England, Wales, Ireland, Sweden, Norway, Denmark, almost all of Europe, Spain, Italy, and motorcycle people... Independents and club people just pulled up next to me. Man, did you make the wrong turn on the freeway or what? Oh, man, I'm just heading to the street. They take me home to their clubhouses, feed me, take care of me. Total strangers. It doesn't matter what country I'm in. Just down the road from us is Mexico. In Tijuana is a very large club, the Solo Angels. They have a large house. They look for people traveling through to say, hey, man, you need a place to stay for a day or two? Come on, hang out with us. Everywhere I've been, I've been treated total strangers. And yet, because I'm on a motorcycle, hey, how you doing? I'm in a restaurant, and the guy, 22 years old, pulls up to me. Hey, man, you mind if I sit down and join you? Be my guest. Another guy, maybe 50, 60 years old. Hey, man, how you doing, man? You mind if I join you for lunch? We're total strangers, but we're riding motorcycles. That's the most special bond we have. And it's nothing to do with just America, although we initiated the motorcycle clubs. It has to do with the fact that it's not that we're special. It's just that we're lucky we have a motorcycle. We're lucky to travel. I encourage people to take advantage of every chance they get.
That's right. Have we heard from our friend Merlin at all? Does he call in? Is he still calling in? Merlin?
He's back in San Diego.
Oh, really? Yeah, he's something else, that guy.
He's a good example. I mean, that's the one thing that's real important about being a motorcycle is that we are a family, regardless of what it is that we ride. I find it fascinating when I pull over to offer assistance, and they're kind of taken back because, number one, I'm a woman. Number two, I can probably fix their bike better than they can.
Hey, can you fix mine?
Oh, I don't get my fingers dirty anymore unless I have to.
I'm just kidding.
Let me ask you something without embarrassing you. How long ago did you and I meet?
What, you and me?
Yeah.
Oh, my, Bill. God. It wasn't when your hair was this silver, I'll tell you that.
we'll say a while ago. You know, you rode up on your motorcycle where we were. We started talking like two equals, two people. I respect the fact you're on your motorcycle, and to this day, you choose to ride a Metric, I choose to ride a Harley-Davidson. That's never been an issue with us, because I respect you as a person who rides her motorcycle, and woe be it to any guy that wants to challenge you on that. You will put miles on your bike, but we, from the moment we met, we were okay with each other. Is that right?
That is correct, but there also is something else that is different, and I hear this oftentimes from a number of women, is that they are treated differently than anything else. And what I see is that I have never been treated anything other than just another fellow biker enjoying being around other bikers. Like, again, going back those few years ago, there weren't that many women that rode, but I never once was like, oh, here's a little powder pack. We have to help her. Did that to me. I would have spit in their face anyway, but they never treated me other than being that of a motorcyclist and an equal. And that was always important.
Fran, I want to tell you, when my wife and I first started driving together, we were at a major club party, and it was a dirt road. My wife grabbed the front brake, although I told her 1,000,000,000 times, don't grab the front brake in the dirt. So she washed out and dropped the bike. I was about 20 feet. I shut my bike off, put on the kickstand, and I looked at her. 15, 20 of our good friends, major club, come running by me. You asshole, get off the bike and help your wife, you asshole. And I kept sitting there. They ran up to my wife said, stop everybody. My husband said, if I drop the bike, I have to try to pick it up myself. One day, he may not be there. So around 25, 30 people all, she picked the bike up herself. All these people came back. They were running to help my wife. All the way, they're walking back. Oh, Bill, sorry for calling an asshole, man. Yeah. But the point is, I could pick the bike up for her, but one day, as she said, I may not be there. So I gave her the opportunity. I'm only 25 feet away. I gave her the opportunity to pick it up. But I will not forget all these people. You asshole, you asshole. Afterwards, they all said, hey, man, you did the right thing. So give the women a chance to do things. Because, again, we may not always be there, guys. In your case, Fran, I said, I've always respected you as a person, a human being first, because you ride your bike. I have friends of mine that just profile, hey, look at me on a Sunday. I've always respected the fact you ride your bike, Fran.
Yeah, I do put a few miles on the bike. It's always so funny because I never really tout the fact that I ride a little. But it's interesting when I have people look at my odometer and it's like, okay, yeah, that's a few miles.
Fran, I have to apologize. Our two-hour show is almost gone.
That sucks.
But
I encourage anybody that wants to call back in. You could do that Tuesday at the same time.
But I want to get back. Stormy, you still with us?
I'm still here.
I'd like to take us out tonight with one of your songs, but why don't you give us a song that you think you'd like to hear tonight? Did I put you on the spot again?
I don't know.
All my exes live in Texas. You know that one?
I know that one, but
I'm sure you
did. I've recorded it. I'm not sure what songs of mine y'all have. What do y'all have that you have?
We Go Together, Barstock Logic, Bill Hilly, True Love, I Will Run For You, Sing the City, A Woman Scorn, Love Don't Have to Happen, Times Like This, Biker Chick, The One That Got Away, Ripple in the Water, Someone Like Me, Heart on Ice, Weary Angel.
Why don't you do Weary Angel? I've got a video to
Weary Angel
plug in a little bit.
I thought
15 songs for you to pick the very last one. Oh, great. Okay. Let's get it.
All right.
My friend and Phil's
well,
friend, Stormy Montana.
And
take us home tonight.
You're going to take us out.
Take care, everyone.
Okay,
buddy. And please say goodnight to John. Tell him we have nothing but respect and admiration for him. Stormy, stay young, stay healthy. Stay on the right path.
Bless y'all.
My only friend.
Good night.
Damn.
Are we going to call him?
We did.